I would love to have D-Wade a part of this team. I think he brings another championship DNA, a championship pedigree. It brings another playmaker to the team and also just has a great, you know, basketball mind. You know, it would be great to have him here. I've talked to D-Wade throughout the whole summer. It's not up to me. It's kind of up to D-Wade. If he can clear waivers, then it's up to our front office. I hope that we can bring him here. I would love to have him.
The benefit is playmaking ability. The Cavs just didn't have enough of that last season. And when they lose a guy like Kyrie Irving, they're really behind the eight ball when it comes to that skill set. But Dwayne Wade, even as he's 35 years old and had kind of an offseason in Chicago last year, he has those playmaking instincts. Now, the Cavs teammate that could be affected the most by the Dwayne Wade addition is J.R. Smith. And on media day, J.R. Smith, before it became obvious that Wade was coming to Cleveland, he addressed the potential of Wade being joined to the group, and he said he's totally fine with giving up his starting role as long as the team keeps winning. He said, if anything, it'll help me prolong my career because I won't have to play as many minutes and be, you know, pounding on my body in that way. Bring him on. So the guys we've heard from so far, LeBron James included, are excited about a guy like Dwayne Wade joining the fold.
Today, we announced charges of fraud and corruption in the world of college basketball. The picture painted by the charges is not a pretty one. Coaches at some of the nation's top programs soliciting and accepting cash bribes. Managers and financial advisors circling blue-chip prospects like coyotes. And employees of one of the world's largest sportswear companies secretly funneling cash to the families of high school recruits. We have charged 10 people in three separate complaints. Four college basketball coaches, three people associated with professional managers and advisors, and three with ties to the major's sportswear company, including its global marketing director for basketball. These men allegedly participated in two different but related schemes. In the first, college coaches took cash bribes from managers and advisors in exchange for directing players and their families to those bribers. In the second scheme, managers, advisors, and those affiliated with the sportswear company worked together to funnel money to families of some of the country's top high school recruits, upwards of $100,000, for the players' commitment to play for the schools sponsored by that company.
Once you get those three letters, not those four letters, but those three letters involved, the game changes because they have the ability to do things the NCAA doesn't have the ability to do. You're talking about a major NCAA violation. While Louisville is appealing a major NCAA violation, if these allegations are verified, I don't see a scenario that Rick Pitino is coaching at Louisville.
They could be looking at up to 20 years in prison. So that is certainly more difficult to deal with than a post season ban or a show cause penalty. The weight of the federal government behind these allegations and charges of wire fraud, mail fraud, money laundering in two separate schemes. The siren call and the most scary thing, I think, to the college basketball industry would be right after the United States attorney finished his remarks at the press conference, an FBI investigator got up and basically said to all of college basketball, we have your playbook and this investigation is ongoing. That's a pretty scary thought.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Thanks so much for being with us. My goodness gracious, what a mess. What an absolute mess we have in college basketball. Rick Pitino, in all likelihood, gone as the head coach at the University of Louisville, as they say down there in Louisville. It's just a two-syllable word, Louisville. For the rest of us, it's Louisville. But at any rate, it's not going to be Rick Pitino's home much longer. Here's what we have. Literally, as of just a few minutes ago, a couple hours ago, we know that Rick Pitino was placed on unpaid leave down there in Louisville. But just as a few minutes ago, it looks like that is just step one toward his ultimate firing. He has not yet been fired, but he has been placed on unpaid leave pending the meetings that will determine his fate. And that, according to multiple reports, including one by the Louisville Courier-Journal, is that Rick Pitino has been, quote, effectively fired. He remains with the title of Louisville head coach right now, but that he has been effectively fired. He was given leave from his post after the latest scandal to rock at university. And you recall, Kushlin, I know you recall, we got so much to get into, by the way. Cavaliers, Dwayne Wade, we got NBA. We're going to talk to Rick Noland about the Cavaliers. You know, we didn't discuss their media day yesterday. We spent most of the time on NBA side of things on the Pistons and our friend David Fernandez from DetroitBadBoys.com. So we talked a lot about their media day. We did not talk about the Cavaliers, despite their status as the defending Eastern Conference champions and making a ton of offseason moves in an attempt to regain their title. We will do that with Rick Noland at 3:35. The big news, of course, being that Dwayne Wade, sometime today, is expected to sign a contract, a free agent deal, after clearing waivers with the Cavaliers, after negotiating a buyout with the Bulls. So we'll get into that, and we are going to continue to talk about the NFL protesting issue. Some new things have happened. DirecTV understands the fans' complaints. I'll explain what that means coming up as well. But for now, I do want to talk a little bit about college basketball and this massive scandal. Cush, you recall, it was only last year in the offseason that I was, again, just reiterating my disgust for the likes of Rick Pitino after we were supposed to believe that his assistant coaches arranged all of these stripper and hooker parties on campus at the athletes' dorm. That everybody knew about in order to entice recruits with sex. The coaches knew about it except the head coach. Everybody just, you know, shh, nobody tell Rick. Nobody tell coach. We'll get this done. As if somehow a man who is literally in control of everything, man who is, you know, the ultimate, obsessive, compulsive guy who knows the details of everything, didn't know about that one. He's just so slippery, slimy, and skeevy. I've never trusted Rick Pitino. Didn't trust him anywhere he's ever been. And they went ahead and said, yeah, but he's our coach. And they went ahead and found a way to look the other way and say, no, Rick wasn't. No. This was assistant coaches going rogue. Okay. Well, now they can't even do that anymore. Pitino given leave from his post after this latest scandal, an FBI probe. This isn't just, you know, the NCAA, inspectors out there, Inspector Clouseau's with their little long hats and their magnifying glasses looking at little trails. This is the FBI. And they probed into fraud and bribery, exposing a number of programs and a bunch of assistant coaches working illegally to obtain the services of high school prospects in a conspiracy effort to steer those players to Adidas. So we're putting marketers, we're putting agents, we're putting assistant coaches, we're putting boosters, we're putting shoe companies, and yes, some head coaches as well, all together in this unholy alliance to try to bribe blue chip prospects into coming to these schools. Certain financial advisors and entrepreneurs were also included in this. Louisville, which is under the FBI investigation, is among the schools caught in this case, which has literally just rocked college basketball in the last 24-plus hours. Now, Louisville athletic director Tom Jurek, who stood by Pitino in all of this and championed him to stay on at the university despite many previous scandals, including the one I just told you about, has been placed on paid leave as well. Is he going to be gone, as is Pitino? Time will tell. He's been there for almost 20 years. The interim president down at Louisville, Greg Postel, said the allegations are serious. It is vital for this university to strictly adhere to NCAA rules and, of course, federal law. Doing nothing would be a tacit enforcement of criminal behavior. Well, you did nothing before when it came to the sex in the athletic dorm scandal, Greg, so let's not be too hasty in the way you describe your efforts. He said Pitino's status will ultimately be determined at a later date, while Jurek's future will be addressed by the university's Board of Trustees on or before its next meeting on October 18. And a source told CBS Sports Gary Parrish that Louisville has no intention of ever allowing Pitino to coach the Cardinals again. And oh, by the way, as long as we're talking about scandals involving skeevy Rick Pitino, and he really is all of that, you know, you got the sex scandal in the athletic dorm, and then again, there's his own sex scandal. And he's just been able, you know what they say about ducks? Water just rolls off a duck's back. You know, like a duck's back, you know, their feathers have like this coating, like this oily type coating on them so that they can go in water without feeling it and having it go down to their skin and making them cold. That's why they can go in freezing cold water. Water rolls off a duck's back because they're so oily. Well, that's Rick Pitino. Nothing stuck to him either because he's so oily. and so slippery and so just disgustingly skeevy. In 2011, if you recall, 6 years ago, an out-of-wedlock sex scandal involving extortion as Karen Seifer, Patino's mistress that he knocked up, apparently went after him, wanted some money in order to keep it quiet. She was actually convicted of trying to extort him, and he made himself, and Louisville made him out to be the victim in the case, despite the fact that he is about as, you know, morally and ethically upstanding, if you will, when it comes to his own personal affairs and his marriage, as he is when it, as he is as a basketball coach. The unprecedented scandal involving the escorts, quote, entertaining, end quote, players and recruits in dorm room parties from 2010 to 2014 didn't cost his job. So he getting women knocked up and then, being extorted, that didn't cost him his job. The sex scandal didn't. But this latest one with the FBI involved now, apparently even they can't find a way to wiggle his oily butt out. The escort scandal, an NCAA case is currently under appeal by Louisville. The NCAA has levied charges that could include vacating the 2013 national championship. That would be awesome. If that happens, it will mark the first time the NCAA has removed a championship from a Division I men's basketball program. We do know that the NCAA removed Final Four appearances by a certain basketball program. Remember which one that is, Kush? That would be your Fab Five up in Ann Arbor.
Yep.
I'll help you out there. As soon as you said, I knew you had no earthly idea what the hell I was talking about.
But I did. It was a little snarky, too. I had a feeling that's where you were going with that.
Yeah. They did remove those non-championships, but those Final Four appearances and Big Ten championships and all the way down the line from the official record books as well. Patino has 770 wins on his on his resume. Let's put it that way. He stands to lose a lot more of them because players who ultimately could have been ruled ineligible after the fact would lead to a vacation of those wins as well. Meanwhile, Louisville's embroiled in an FBI investigation due to illicit recruitment of multiple players, a wide-ranging conspiracy that also includes two Adidas representatives. Now, to be clear, this is not just a Louisville scandal. As I said, this is multiple schools involving multiple coaches, involving multiple boosters, Adidas shoe line, the shoe manufacturer, et cetera, et cetera. But he's clearly the biggest fish here because he has wriggled off of enough hooks, NCAA hooks, you know, in the past. The idea that they have him now, to me, is easily the biggest story here. It should be a bigger story that it's if they've reeled in, you know, some 10 schools and a handful of coaches and all these other people, it should be indicative of all of college basketball because it makes you wonder if this is what we were able to hook, you know, and bring in under the umbrella, if you will, of this particular scandal. You wonder how many others like it are going on because it's a death struggle. You know, I mean, it's a life and death struggle for coaches to recruit top players that you have to have in order to keep your jobs, especially in the era of one and done. You got to get this blue chip in here this year because, you know, last year's blue chip that you were successful in getting is long gone. He played his freshman year, averaged 13 points a game, is on his way to the NBA. So every year the fight is on, much more so than ever before. And I think, you know, in many ways, like I said, the Patino story is the biggest one because of the name and because of the background of Rick Patino and his, you know, his slippery, oily ways. He's just such a huckster, kind of like John Calipari. That's why I've never, ever, ever had an ounce of respect for John Calipari. None. The head coach at the University of Kentucky, who had his wins at Memphis vacated and his championship, and he had his vacated at UMass before that, and just a trail of corruption everywhere he's been. Same thing with Rick Pitino. Those should be the biggest stories, as well as what I just said, you know, a number of other stories makes you wonder how widespread this corruption is when it comes to college basketball. But I think in some ways the other massive story about this is what college basketball has become. I am in no way, I think you could gather from my opening monologue here, that I'm not fond of these coaches for doing these things. So, you know, in no way would I suggest that we excuse their behavior, we excuse their decisions, etc. But the circumstances in which college coaches find themselves when it comes to recruiting anymore are so different than they've ever been before. Picture yourself as a college basketball coach in the 1980s, even in the 1990s maybe, in the early 1990s anyway. You go out and recruit a Patrick Ewing, and you bring him to Georgetown, and you bring Sleepy Floyd with him, and you look at that and you say, oh my God, the next 4 years are set. We are golden. Look what we were able to reel in. And the following year, there isn't anywhere nearly as much pressure to go out there and get the next five-star guy. Because if you don't, it's okay. We still have this incredible group. Or let's go back to Steve Fisher. Let's do the Jalen Ryan. That's a bad idea because of some of the corruption there. But if you recruit a great freshman class or two or three, let alone the Fab Five as they came to be known, let's just say you got Jalen Rose and Chris Webber alone.
Okay.
The pressure in their sophomore seasons or off seasons to go and get another tremendous class or another five-star guy or whatever, much, much less. Because you've got these guys as sophomores, and then you're going to have them as juniors, and then you're going to have them as seniors. And so really only about once every 2, 3, 4 years do you have to go out there and get the next big thing or things.
Right, okay.
But in 2017, and in this era of one-and-dones, every damn year you've got to pull the rabbit out of the hat again. You've got to get the next five-star blue-chip guy because your current five-star blue-chip freshman is about to be an NBA rookie. And the cupboard's going to be bare unless you get this one. And when you get him and he bails and bolts to the NBA, you better have the next guy on the list ready to go, or you are going to slip into basketball irrelevancy. And programs that are supposed to be conference champions every year and Sweet 16 teams every year, and pushing on Michigan State to Final Fours every year, if you're a great coach like Tom Izzo, or if you're a Coach K, or whatever the case might be, when you're expected to do that, you don't get the luxury of a 24-11 year, because that's just, oh my God, the world is ending when you lose double-digit games at a school like that. You can't just say, I've got a couple of just average freshman classes. If you don't bring in the stars each and every year, you slip into irrelevancy. So it is a different time right now because of the way the rules are set. Coaches are under the gun and under the pressure to get that guy every single year. And you know what, Kush? Sometimes you can't guarantee it without doing what they're doing. And that is, how can we really make you like Louisville? How can we really, really entice you to come to Virginia Tech? How can we really make sure that you don't want to go anywhere but UCLA? Well, where they're having a party down there in the dorms, and oh, by the way, have we introduced you to Mr. Smith here? Yeah, you know what, Jim? Hey, Jim Smith, come over here and meet this guy. I forgot you work for Adidas, don't you? Yeah, hey, this is a real nice guy I'd just like you to meet. Introductions are made. Handshakes are made. The $100 handshakes begin, and on down the line we go. It's just so overly competitive when it comes to the recruiting aspects in college basketball. And what I'll say about that, Jim, is kind of evidence is the Pete Carrolls helping Reggie Bush's parents get a house back in 2005, those kinds of things, 2004, whenever it was, those are fewer and far between. College football recruiting scandals where players are being paid or where, massive conspiracies like the kind we're talking about with college hoops. College football scandals are very, very, they pale in comparison. And why? Because, coaches get blue chip players and they get them for at least three. They get them for at least three seasons because of the NFL rule that says you cannot apply for the draft until 3 years after your high school class graduates. Whether you go to school all 3 years or not is your choice, but you can't come in until 3 years have gone by, which means you've got 3 years of playing for these guys. And it's not as live or die, sink or swim, if we don't sign this blue chip recruit, where we'd have to push the envelope and break the rules. So it's really, really a kind of a dangerous place that college basketball is in right now, even though I'm very, very – and again, I say that without any suggestion at all of being disappointed in Rick Pitino and some of the others being busted, because I cannot stand their oily hides. But it is a very difficult thing in college hoops.
It is a very difficult thing, and even with hearing all of this and FBI's involved and all that other stuff
mm-hmm. –
on some level, do you feel as I do, Bob, that on some level, none of this has seemed surprising? Like, I'm not surprised by any of these things that we're hearing on this thing.
No, I'm not. Upset
by them,
particularly
but I'm not
because
surprised.
Of the guys involved.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. That clinches it, that why I'm not surprised, you know, in the least by this happening. But there are going to be ramifications that are felt, you know, down the line for a while. I've even heard in the last 24 hours people use death penalty, as in what they did to SMU football
SMU, yeah.
Way, way back when. I've heard that bandied about for Louisville because they're, you know, they're what's it called?
The scandals are piling up.
Yeah, the scandals are piling up. They're already trying to get out of one kind of probation thing or something that's going on right now with the story you referenced earlier, so... I'm upset by this. It's starting to make the gears turn to think, how do you fix something like this, especially with the big-time hoops programs who, as you pointed out, they know they're going to get these big studs for only one single year. There's that rule, by the way, that we've bandied about at times in the past that's rearing its ugly head again that needs to be fixed. But until that is, that's how college basketball is, and the biggest of programs are even more susceptible to this because they need those big-name blue-chip prospects to keep it all going, keep the wins coming in the singular years that they're going to be there.
That is exactly correct. They really, really do. So, no, it doesn't surprise me at all, Jim. It really does not. And it certainly doesn't surprise me when you're talking about people like this. Look, whenever you – it's kind of like I don't want to go overstep when I say this, but it's, you know, it's kind of like the career criminal that keeps dodging the jail cell. You know, he continues to get the right lawyer, who continues to get the right judge, who continues to say probation, probation, probation. What incentive does he have to start following the law and obeying the law?
Good call.
You know, I keep getting away with it, for crying out loud. You know, I keep on. And as long as they continue to let a Rick Pitino get away with this and this and this and this, and no moral standard is upheld whatsoever when it comes to personal conduct in the coach's contract. You know, we talk about the personal conduct policy in the NFL
sure.
all the time. The personal conduct clauses in a coach's contract, when none of those things are enforced, what incentive does he have to ever start playing by the rules when he can just continue to get away with it again and again and again?
Well said. So, well said.
All right. We got a lot to do. We're going to talk a little NBA basketball coming up on the other side of the Sports Center here at the bottom of the hour. So what do you say we get our wild stat out of the way?
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Minnesota Twins are on the verge of a playoff appearance just 1 year after finishing last in their division and losing over 100 games a year ago. Even with the advent of the wild card game, worst to playoffs or worst to first is still rarer than you would think. In the entire history of baseball, only 16 teams have ever gone from last in their division one season to making the playoffs the next. Plus, all 16 of those instances happened after 1990. And again, probably attributable to the wild card game. But the Twins, who beat the Indians last night, continue to climb closer to getting just there. And oh, by the way, as long as we're mentioning the Indians, now just a one-game lead over the Houston Astros for the best record in the American League and home field advantage throughout the AL playoffs.
It is two in practice, though.
It is two in practice, yes, because of the tiebreaker. But that is your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Rick Nolan joins us to talk NBA basketball, and Dwayne Wade reuniting with LeBron James after their talents were together in Miami. A different kind of big three with D-Wade, LeBron, and now Kevin Love playing the role of Chris Bosh. We'll talk about all that with Rick Nolan coming up next on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
We can't hear that yet. Hold on a second. Here we go.
I would love to have D-Wade a part of this team. I think he brings another championship DNA, a championship pedigree. It brings another playmaker to the team and also just has a great, you know, basketball mind. You know, it would be great to have him here. I've talked to D-Wade throughout the whole summer. It's not up to me. It's kind of up to D-Wade. If he can clear waivers, then it's up to our front office. I hope that we can bring him here. I would love to have him.
It looks like that is what is exactly going to happen. It's just a matter of time. And joining us now to talk about that monster move, a reunion between the two best buds, who had their talents at one time together in South Beach. And joining us now to talk about it is our good friend from the Medina Gazette and the Elyria Chronicle Telegram, otherwise known as the Cavaliers Beat, out there in Cleveland. Rick Nolan joins us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Mr. Nolan, good to talk to you again, sir. How are you?
Good to be back. I'm fine. Hope everything's well there as well.
Everything is just hunky-dory. Boy, I'll tell you what, it's looking like a reunion of MVPs together that you got building out there with the Cavaliers. LeBron James, former MVP Derrick Rose, Dwayne Wade. Was he ever an MVP? I think he was, wasn't he once?
You know what? I was going to look that up. I don't know that he was, Bob.
I can't remember, for some reason I thought he was.
I don't think he has been, because LeBron was winning.
He was MVP, though, wasn't he, when he won the finals with Shaq?
In 06, I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So we'll call him an MVP because he was an MVP in the finals then. There you go. Well, at least.
Yeah, he was. He was the 06 NBA finals, but he hasn't won the league award.
But not the league MVP.
Right.
Okay, fair enough. But at any rate, my goodness gracious, what a collection of talent that they're putting together. And so where are we in this process, first off, before we talk about fit and, how this whole thing will look, Rick Nolan? Where are we in the process of getting Dwayne Wade's signature on a contract and an agreement to go become a Cavalier?
I think we'll hear the news shortly after 5 o'clock when he clears waivers. LeBron spoke about him again today after practice and did so as if he was already a member of the team. So
this is one of the worst-kept secrets we've had in a while. I mean, even several months ago, we knew there was going to be a buyout, and he was not going to be playing this season with the Bulls, right?
Yeah, and, Ty Lue took the organization way out and, refused to talk about it specifically until it was finalized. But LeBron just leapfrogged that little bit of the process and spoke to him, spoke about him as if he's 100% here, done deal. And it is. So it's only a matter of an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours here before I think we'll be getting the official release from the team.
So obviously we know that he and LeBron have fantasized about getting back together again after they played their time together in South Beach for 4 years. And, of course, there's always the – the banana boat stories, well, at some point they're going to play together with Melo and Chris Paul as well, all this, this foursome of best buddies. But for now, it's the two of them. How is this all going to fit, given the fact that Isaiah Thomas is probably going to be back sometime in January? I don't know, maybe February. Maybe they may even keep him out to the All-Star break in February. But Derrick Rose is going to run the show from the point guard position. They're going to have to find shots for him. He's not a guy who does not like to shoot himself, much like the outgoing point guard Kyrie Irving. So Rose likes to shoot. Wade likes to shoot. James likes to shoot. Kevin Love, who's been very, very unselfish in his time together as the third wheel of the big three, waits for his shots, but he's going to want opportunities. How's that all going to fit, Rick Nolan?
That's a great question. And the first three guys you mentioned there, Rose, LeBron, and Wade, not only like to shoot, but they like to do things with the ball before they shoot. So I think this is going to be a real interesting process, and I can't wait to see how it pans out. This might sound crazy, Bob, for just signing a guy who's been a 12-time All-Star, but if I'm the Cavs, I wouldn't be averse to trying to convince Dwayne Wade to be the best sixth man in the league and tell him that they would like him to come off the bench. Now, he's going to have to buy into that, but here's my reason for saying this. We know that the three-pointers becoming a big part of the NBA offense, and it was a huge, huge part of the Cavs offense last year. But if you start a lineup, Derrick Rose is like a 25% less than that three-point shooter for his career.
Mm-hmm.
Wade has never been a good three-point shooter. In fact, until the last couple of years, he rarely even took one. LeBron is streaky at best, and Tristan's your garbage man. So if you start those four with Kevin Love is only your best perimeter shooter, at least from distance in that lineup. So, and you also have three guys who have been primary ball handlers for the bulk of their career in LeBron, Wade, and Derrick Rose. So if you can convince Dwayne Wade that he's going to get his 25 to 30 minutes, but he's going to get them off the bench, then you can start JR, who is more of a floor spacer, which might be what this group needs more than another semi-ball dominant guy. I think you might be better off, but that's going to take, you know, first of all, it's going to take JR playing a little better than he did for much of last year. It's going to take Wade buying in. You know, and then you have a whole other dynamic coming in January when Isaiah comes back, because he's a bit more of a weapon from the 3-point line. Maybe Wade could start at that point in the year. I don't know. They have so many pieces, parts on this team that even before the Wade trade, I tried to put together what I thought was a depth chart, and there's going to be a lot of good players on this team who are going to find themselves on the outside of the rotation looking in, and that's true even if they go 9 or 10 deep for parts of the regular season. So this is going to be a big, big test for Tyronn Lue. He's got tons of weapons and tons of different looks he can throw at teams, but he's going to have to get it all to mesh. He's going to have to find chemistry. Everybody's going to have to buy in. So I'm a believer that you can never have too much talent, but I'm also a believer that that talent has to mesh at some point, and I think that's going to be a little bit of a process with this team.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I could not agree more. By the way, Dwayne Wade at 35 years of age knows that he's not what he was. For that matter, Derrick Rose knows he's not what he once was, but his is more to injuries than age because he's younger than LeBron. But I wonder if Wade wouldn't – I mean, Derrick Rose knew when he came on board here that he was going to play once the trade was made. He was either going to play behind Kyrie Irving or he was going to play behind Isaiah Thomas. He has to be okay with that. He signed a very tiny contract because of that. He knows it, and he accepts it because he's not what he was. You would think that a guy with Dwayne Wade's pedigree and his championships and his relationship with LeBron and the knowledge that, you know, based on what he did last year in Chicago and being 35 years of age, maybe he would buy in. I mean, do you think that a guy who knows he's not out for individual glory anymore, he's never going to win another scoring title, he's never going to be the man on a team like this, if he's not going to be the man, why not do what's best for the team and trying to unseat the Golden State Warriors and be that sixth guy? I can almost see him being willing to do that given all of the circumstances we find ourselves in here.
You know, I can too, particularly if they approach it in a way that this is a bonus for you. This is how highly we think of you. Does not mean you're not good enough to start. It means you can help us even more off the bench. But who knows? I mean, that whole premise I just laid out could be entirely wrong. Maybe Ty Lue already said, hey, this guy, he's going to be our starter. We didn't bring him here to be a backup. Those are things we're going to find out here in the next few days and on into the preseason. And it goes much deeper than Dwayne Wade. You know, LeBron's going to play his 35 minutes at small forward, so where are you going to get minutes for Kyle Korver? Where are you going to get, you know, Jay Crowder's going to get his decent chunk of minutes. I don't think, you know, Shumpert, I think they would love to get rid of if they can find a taker, because I don't see where he can play at all.
Not at all.
The way the team is put together. Now, and that's, you know, he didn't have a very good year last year, but, you know, that's just a testament to how much talent they have individually. Again, I stress it's individual talent, because whether all these pieces parts are gonna mesh, I don't know, you know, and you're still talking, you know, Richard Jefferson, I don't see how he plays a minute either.
I wonder if he makes the roster, to be quite honest.
I honestly think that could be in jeopardy. I was going over that today. They now have 16 guaranteed contracts, and that's not even counting Kay Felder, who I think is ultimately going to be one of the two-way G League players that they're allowed. So they have 16 guys in here.
Does that count Jose Calderon?
I'm counting him among the 16, and there are people who think that he could be just waived. But I'm hesitant to do that if I'm the Cavs, because right now he's your only proven legitimate backup point guard until Isaiah Thomas comes back.
Until he's healthy.
So, so that leaves you with Richard Jefferson, with Shumpert, Chetty Osman. They're not going to cut Chetty Osman, but ideally I think they'd like to make a 2-for-1 or a 3-for-1 trade or a 1-for-none trade where they get a pick back. But if they can't, then one of these guys is going to have to be outright released. And you're talking, I think, probably RJ. Through no real fault of RJ's,
they just have a numbers game.
Plethora of swingman-type players on their roster. And they got a plethora of guys that can go between the 3 and 4 position as well. So, you know, maybe they can find somebody to take him and get a future second-round pick or something. His salary is pretty cap-friendly. He's always been a solid pro. You know, maybe they can go that route and just get a pick for him. They're probably more likely to get a pick for Osman, but I think they'd like to at least get a little look at him. It's going to be interesting. You know, a lot of good guys aren't going to get minutes on this team. They're going to be legit. They're going to be legit through the 13 active guys every night. And you can play 10.
We're looking at this by position, Rick. I just want to kind of try to ferret some of this out.
Rosen, Calderon, point guard.
Your point guards are Thomas and Rose.
Well, let's go with the healthy guys now and leave Isaiah out of it.
I'm just talking about guys who are going to be on the active roster. Is he not going to be on the active roster because of?
Oh yeah, he has to count. Yeah, so
that's what I mean.
I think you have to count Calderon on that too right now.
Okay.
Just because Isaiah is going to be hurt. So there's three point guards right there.
Three point guards. Two guards would include Wade and JR. And is Chump a 2 or 3? I don't know where you put him.
He's a 2.
He's a question mark anyway.
Right. So that would be 6 if you counted Chump.
Well, let's not count him. For the sake of this discussion, we're just looking at short things as much as we can. LeBron and Jay Crowder are both 3s.
And you have to count Kyle Korver somewhere.
Korver is a 3. So we're up to, what is that, 8 guys now?
That's 8.
All right, and then we got Kevin Love.
And then you have to count. Well, you kind of almost about have to count Chetty Osman there too, which is 9.
Okay, so that's Love and Zizic and Thompson are 3 bigs. Even though Love is he is what he is. He's a 4, stretch 4, but he's a 6'11" guy, so we'll call him a big.
That's 12, and you have you have Jeff Green and Channing Frye, which gets you to 14.
And Shump, which is because we did not.
So then you have Shump and Richard Jefferson, which we didn't count.
Right. So you're looking at those last 5 guys there, including some pretty guys who still have some skills who can do some things. Jefferson,
correct.
Fry, who else was on that list then?
Calderon would be on. So you're looking, and you're not going to get rid of any. Yeah, you're not going to get rid of any bigs because they're short of legitimate bigs. So,
Zizic
is going to be safe.
Yeah.
Thompson and Love, and Jeff Green. I can kind of, he's kind of a flip 3-4, but I think on this team he's going to be way more of a 4 than a 3. So if you can't make any moves, you have to cut somebody out of Calderon, Richard Jefferson, probably, because I don't think they'll cut Osman, and they're not going to eat the contract of Shump. So Calderon and Richard Jefferson are veteran minimum or close deals. So if you can't make a trade and get no player in return, then one of those two guys, I think, has to be released.
So hypothetically speaking, then, Rick Noland, who joins us, Rick was covering the Cavaliers media day on Monday, and we're just kind of projecting now that Dwayne Wade is expected to sign a contract sometime after 5 o'clock today when he clears waivers officially. In a hypothetical 4th consecutive finals against the Golden State Warriors, in a dream world, when I say dream world, meaning everybody being healthy, if everything worked right, it would be Isaiah and depending on what you and I just discussed, either Smith or Wade at the two, the other one becoming the sixth man and bringing, especially if it's J.R. Swish, just instant offense off the bench coming into launch.
Right.
LeBron at the three with Jay Crowder coming off the bench to spell him and or Love at the four. Love is the four. Tristan is still your five. Your depth players then become Rose coming in for Smith, Korver coming in for whomever. We don't even need to go down into the Calderon world down there.
No, but then you still have Green and
In that hypothetical matchup, is it any closer than it was in the five-game, relatively easy championship win for the Warriors over the Cavaliers that we saw this past June?
That's what we're going to spend 82 games finding out, I think. that's not dodging your question. Because on paper...
Just pull out your magic eight ball and ask it and tell me what it says.
on paper, they certainly have more talent. And they, let's not forget how good Kyrie was either.
Of course.
The guy had his faults, but.
He put an awful lot of pressure on a defense, boy. He put lot of pressure on a defense.
Yes, he did. So that's number one. Number two is 12 or 13 players, they don't make you better in the finals because you're only going to use eight.
Right.
So your top eight's still got to be better than Golden State's top eight. I'm not sure they're there yet. In a best-case scenario, everything works out perfectly. Isaiah Thomas comes back with no injury problems. Derrick Rose doesn't get hurt. Wade, doesn't have any age or knee or back issues. Then would seem like they should have a better chance, shouldn't it? But it's those things don't necessarily always pan out. Like I said, I'm not dodging the question. Here's another one I'll throw at you, because I actually suggested this in the preseason thing I wrote about different things to watch during training camp, and I can see Love starting at center on this team at some point this season.
How do you feel about it? Does he defend the center position?
I'm not against it. He's an intelligent defender. He's a very smart player. He knows his strengths. He does his best to hide his weaknesses. He makes your offense even more lethal because then you can have either a Crowder or LeBron mix at the 3-4, and they're interchangeable. They could play. LeBron could, at times is going to be playing the point guard at one end of the floor and power forward at the other anyway. That's kind of become the trend in the NBA is to get smaller, not bigger, and become more versatile. So I don't rule that out. And
he's playing center though, Rick, real quick, I mean, can he still get to the corner and do what he does on offense? Can he still be that, that stretch player that he likes to be, or does he have to be on the ball somewhere?
No, I think absolutely he can do that. You can use Crowder or LeBron or Jeff Green as your guy on the block. And if you watch, and I know you do NBA games this era, a lot of teams are playing postless. The only thing they're doing is a high pick and roll, and it's usually a flare out rather than a cut to the basket for the big guy. So, I think it works. I think, in my coaching mind, which isn't granted always the greatest, but it allows Tristan to play against backups rather than against starters and be an energy garbage pail guy, which is his strength. But again, that's probably all contingent on how good a defensive team this team ends up being as well. That's an area you can use all kinds of metrics to measure, but I always go by the old fashioned eye test. Are they giving consistent effort? Are they keeping the ball in front of them? Are they making correct switches? And that's a work in progress as well. On paper, Crowder's a very good defensive player. Jeff Green has the tools to play guys who aren't too physically big pretty well. LeBron can be as good as he wants to be. I don't know so much about Wade at this point of his career, which is another reason why he might be best off coming off the bench.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Hey, Rick, I'm up against the top of the hour, so I got to end this, but I want to ask you one real quick one on the on the way into this top of the hour. You were at the media gathering on Monday, and you heard LeBron talking extensively about politics and the president and everything else that's going on. Just very quickly, do you expect, I'm not asking you to take a side in any way, I'm just asking you for a prediction. Do you expect we will start to see on the NBA sidelines some of the stuff we are seeing on the NFL sidelines right now?
My hunch is yes. You're not going to see it from LeBron. I asked him that question specifically. Would he ever do it?
He would just keep talking. He wouldn't do that, but he would just continue to talk about it.
I think you very well could. Now, here's something I've been trying to look into, and I haven't found an answer yet. We know that the NFL is obligated to, well, they're supposed to be obligated to have the players on the field for the national anthem because the U.S. Armed Forces are paying millions of dollars for that to be done. The NBA has no such agreement. So,
but they do. What I'm thinking, they don't have an agreement, but they have a rule. We all remember when Chris Jackson, formerly Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, formerly Chris Jackson, because of his Muslim beliefs, started sitting during the national anthem, if you recall, and then was fined every game that he did it until he started standing again because it is an NBA rule.
That I did not know, but here's something that I think the NBA could consider, because all the high school games I've been to this year have already done this. They could play the national anthem with 10 minutes to go in warm-ups. Both teams go back to the locker room, and then when it's over, they come out, finish their warm-ups, and go straight into the starting lineups. Now, whether people agree or disagree with that, the one thing I see it as is a possible solution to avoid any I don't know what you want to call them, incidents, demonstrations. It's something that I, if I'm the commissioner of the league, I might consider.
But
we'll see. I don't know that you'll see, I'm 100% sure you won't see LeBron do it. I'm not sure what the fines and penalties are currently for players.
This is what happened back in 1996, Rick. And I got to wrap it here. But March 12, 1996, the NBA suspended Abdul-Rauf for one game, citing a rule that players must line up in a dignified posture for the anthem. It cost him $32,000 of his then $2.6 million salary. The union supported Rauf. He quickly reached a compromise with the league that allowed him to stand and pray with his head down during the anthem. Instead of looking at the flag, he could just have his head down. So the NBA does have, or at least in 96, I don't know if they've changed it.
Right.
I doubt that they would have, but they must line up in a dignified posture for the anthem. So that's a little different
than the NFL has,
and maybe that's something they're going to have to really, really, you know, crack down on to make sure that they don't get in the middle of all of this stuff that the NFL is dealing with right now. So
I know you're up against it. I learned something today from you if that's the case. And if money's involved, I think you'll see a lot less guys kneel because it is part of the contract.
I will look for my name in your column for attribution now that you're going to discuss this.
All righty.
Thanks for the time, my man. I appreciate it.
All right.
Rick Nolan joining us. Let's get to the top of the hour Sports Center. Hour number two coming up on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I would love to have D-Wade a part of this team. I think he brings another championship DNA, a championship pedigree. He brings another playmaker to the team and also just has a great, you know, basketball mind. You know, it would be great to have him here. I've talked to D-Wade throughout the whole summer. It's not up to me. It's kind of up to D-Wade. If he can clear waivers, then it's up to our front office. I hope that we can bring him here. I would love to have him. I
mean, the benefit is playmaking ability. The Cavs just didn't have enough of that last season. And when they lose a guy like Kyrie Irving, they're really behind the eight ball when it comes to that skill set. But Dwayne Wade, even at he's 35 years old and had kind of an off-season Chicago last year. He has those playmaking instincts. Now, the Cavs teammate that could be affected the most by the Dwayne Wade addition is J.R. Smith. And on Media Day, J.R. Smith, before it became obvious that Wade was coming to Cleveland, he addressed the potential of Wade being joined to the group, and he said he's totally fine with giving up his starting role as long as the team keeps winning. He said, if anything, it will help me prolong my career because I won't have to play as many minutes and be, you know, pounding on my body in that way. Bring him on. So the guys we've heard from so far, LeBron James included, are excited about a guy like Dwayne Wade joining the fold.
Today, we announce charges of fraud and corruption in the world of college basketball. The picture painted by the Chargers is not a pretty one. Coaches at some of the nation's top programs soliciting and accepting cash bribes. Managers and financial advisors circling blue-chip prospects like coyotes. And employees of one of the world's largest sportswear companies secretly funneling cash to the families of high school recruits. We have charged 10 people in 3 separate complaints. 4 college basketball coaches, 3 people associated with professional managers and advisors, and 3 with ties to the major's sportswear company, including its global marketing director for basketball. These men allegedly participated in 2 different but related schemes. In the first, college coaches took cash bribes from managers and advisors in exchange for directing players and their families to those bribers. In the second scheme, managers, advisors, and those affiliated with the sportswear company worked together to funnel money to families of some of the country's top high school recruits, upwards of $100,000, for the player's commitment to play for the schools sponsored by that company.
Once you get those 3 letters, not those 4 letters, but those 3 letters involved, the game changes because they have the ability to do things the NCAA doesn't have the ability to. You're talking about a major NCAA violation. While Louisville is appealing a major. NCAA violation, if these allegations are verified, I don't see a scenario that Rick Pitino is coaching at Louisville.
They could be looking at up to 20 years in prison. So that is certainly more difficult to deal with than a postseason ban or a show cause penalty. The weight of the federal government behind these allegations and charges of wire fraud, mail fraud, money laundering in 2 separate schemes. The siren call and the most scary thing, I think, to the college basketball industry would be right after the United States attorney finished his remarks at the press conference, an FBI investigator got up and basically said to all of college basketball, we have your playbook and this investigation is ongoing. That's a pretty scary thought.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, that is exactly what it is. Welcome to hour number 2 of the Extravaganza. Getting a little bit started, or excuse me, getting started a little bit late in this hour because we went a little bit longer in hour number 1. Regardless of what hour you listen, you've got to be paying attention for the cue to call. You realize that, don't you, throughout the day? Yeah, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Putting $1,000 4 times a day into your pocket. Potentially, in the 4K a day contest. Listen weekdays at 9 a.m., then again at noon, then at the start of the show at 3 o'clock, then at 6 o'clock for a keyword. When you hear that keyword, you're going to text that keyword to 62582 for a chance at a grand 4 times a day. It is the 4K a day only from Toledo Sports Leader, ESPN 1065theticket.com. More information is online at 1065theticket.com. You heard that part already. Don't forget, we're also going to qualify before the end of the hour, before the end of this half hour, for the European vacation as well. I don't think Chevy Chase is going to be a part of that, FYI, but it is our tickets European vacation. We'll tell you about that coming up. A lot of really good stuff in the first hour as far as the NBA and also a lot on the college football scandal. Rick Pitino looks like he is out at Louisville after the latest scandal there. I want to go back to the number one story in sports, and that is politics in sports. The NFL continues to have all kinds of feedback, all kinds of backlash, and yes, indeed, all kinds of differing opinions on what is right and what is wrong when it comes to these protests. Let's start with the latest high-profile figures to oppose the national anthem protests on sidelines at NFL games. We all know what happened. About a week ago, last weekend, there were, no more than a handful of protesters at various games. I want to say no more than 10. Probably no more than 8. I can name most of them. Michael Bennett, Marshawn Lynch, Malcolm Jenkins. That's 3. I can't name most of them. Those are 3 that I know I can name. There's a handful of others that did kneel down as of a week ago. But this past weekend, that number ballooned to 230. But it became much less about the national anthem, much less about whatever it is that people are griping about, and more about a reaction to the president. Who said they should be fired if they do these kinds of things. Well, some owners incurred the wrath of fans when they supported the protesters. How about Jimmy and D? That would be G if you combine them. Jimmy and D Haslam, the owners of the Browns, issued a statement saying they support the protesters and their right to express themselves because of inequality, this, that, and the other thing. Jerry Jones, we know, on Monday night. We talked about it at length yesterday. Decided to try to play both sides of the fence, kneeling before the anthem in solidarity with protesters, but standing during the anthem to try to win over fans who don't like this nonsense. But here are a couple of other high-profile guys who are playing a little bit of a different tune. Kush, I don't know. Stop me if you've heard this already. Jerry Richardson, owner, Carolina Panthers. He was forced to have a meeting today with players who described themselves as frustrated. Frustrated Carolina Panthers. Meeting with their owner about the restrictions that he would like to place on his players when it comes to protests. This was the statement from Jerry Richardson, owner of the Panthers. Quote, "We are proud of the men we have on this football team. Our players have been active and impactful participants in making our community stronger. From the first time I stepped into an NFL locker room at Memorial Stadium in Baltimore in 1959, I have lived and seen the sport's ability to bring people of all backgrounds together. Politicizing the game is damaging and takes the focus off of the greatness of the game itself and those who play it." End quote. Those are the words of Carolina Panthers owner Jerry Richardson. To Jerry Richardson, I have just four words of response to that.
Can you dig it?
Could not possibly agree more. Politicizing the game does take away from the game. I want to talk about stats and standings. I want to talk about matchups and results. I want to talk about all of the things that I've loved about football for my entire life on this earth. And I wasn't walking into Memorial Stadium in 1959. Jerry Richardson is much, much older than me. But I want to do the same thing, and I think politicizing this game does indeed take away from the greatness of it. It is also leading more and more people to turn it off, which I'll cover in just a second. But now the second, and by the way, Jerry Richardson, I think, was every bit within his right to say what he said. I don't want to politicize this game. It takes away from the greatness of the game. Now, Panthers players didn't like that. They don't like the idea that they may be limited in how they may protest or demonstrate before games. The only player to do any of it, by the way, was defensive end Julius Peppers. He said he felt the need to do that because of Trump, quote, attacking my brothers, end quote. He said, I felt like he attacked my brothers in the league, so I thought it was appropriate to stand with them and stay in the locker room. So, okay, that's right. He stayed in the locker room. Okay, fair enough. But at any rate, that's what Jerry Richardson did, and now he's got to deal with his players who are upset about whatever their limitations are going to be. By the way, it should be made very clear. Any limitations on player protesting are 100% up to Jerry Richardson. Why do you think that is? If you didn't say because he's their boss, then you don't understand the nature of the work world. You do what your boss tells you to do. When you're on the clock, you're on his time. You do what you're told to do. I said it yesterday. If you're an accountant or if you're a deli worker, I'll say it again today. If you're a Jeep worker, you don't get to. Maybe you're in a dealership, a car dealership. Somebody comes in to buy a new car, and they sit down and they say, tell me about the options on this one. Tell me about what colors that one comes in. Tell me about protections. Tell me about warranties. And instead of giving them all of those things, you sit there on your knee telling them about the injustices of this world and how you think this country is so racist against people of color, et cetera, et cetera. Chances are your general manager or owner of that dealership is going to come out to you and say, take your knee taking, protesting, politicizing self off somewhere because you're not working here anymore. My job is to sell cars, not to protest, not to politicize. My job is to sell cars, okay? Chances are you're going to be gone. You do that in virtually any workplace, that's what's going to happen. So if Jerry Richardson, this is his workplace, this is his team's workplace, and he tells them, this is what we will do and how we will do it, you do it. Or you get suspended, or you get fined. Whatever restrictions he places on this should be 100% up to him. Not Donald Trump. Shouldn't be up to a judge. Certainly not up to Congress. It's up to the owner of the private institution. Period. Same thing for me. I'm on the radio every day. If my bosses come up to me and say, you can't say this word or that word, or if you can't speak on this or that, I can indeed choose to say KMA, that's text code for kiss my rear end. I could say KMA, don't you dare try to limit my First Amendment rights. I'll say what I want to say. And you know what? I'll be right. I have the First Amendment right to say what I want to say. But considering I'm working for them and their private company, they could say, fine, say what you want to say, but when you're done, you're fired. Oh, okay. They have the right to do that too. So just to get that out there, Jerry Richardson is right. And any owner who wants to lay down the law and limit what these individuals can do as far as protests, political statements, et cetera, while on the clock, while on the job. Now, once they punch out for the day, after the game or after practice or after the film session or after the meeting, whatever it is that they have during the week, if they want to go out and stand on a street corner, on a public square, in whatever city in which they live and work, and they want to bullhorn their way to the masses and say, this country has got to stop doing A, B, C, D, and E, and here's how I propose to stop it, E, F, G, and H, even if they want to go on TV, talk to the local news anchors and say, this is what I think, go ahead. But when you're on the clock, and particularly when they're playing the national anthem and presenting the colors, it is up to the owners to decide what they want to do with their private companies. I don't think there should be any dispute on that. I don't care if you're black or white or right or left or black Republican or Democrat or anything else. I don't think whatever opposites there might be. That should be very easy for all of us to understand. Now let's get to the second figure that I'm talking about. Hall of Fame quarterback John Elway, president of football operations for the Broncos, issued a statement yesterday as well, saying that he believes in standing for the national anthem. But he does understand why players who are upset and less than receptive to President Donald Trump's heavy criticism. According to the statement, Elway said, I'm one that believes in standing for the national anthem, and I've always believed that. I believe this is the greatest country in the world, he continued. We are very fortunate to live here, but it's obviously not perfect. There are a lot of things that need to be corrected, and we will continue to work on those things. He went on to say, I understand the players and the way they felt from the comments that were made earlier in the week, talking about Trump's criticisms. They felt they had to go down and kneel, and that's up to them. Hopefully, as we go forward, we can start concentrating on football a little bit more. Take the politics out of football, John Elway said. But I think that last week was a good show of unity by the NFL, and hopefully this week we can move forward. In other words, you did it, now be done with it. Take politics out of football and let's do our thing. Let's entertain the masses on Sunday afternoons and evenings and Monday night. And really starting tomorrow night with the Thursday nighter, let's entertain the masses and get them back on our side. Get them excited about watching us again, because right now, you know what they're doing, don't you? They're running. They're either running away from stadiums, or they are speaking with their thumbs, the thumbs that control their remote controls, and they are clicking off NFL games in incredibly increasing numbers. I told you this a little bit yesterday, that the week two NFL ratings were the lowest single weekend ratings the NFL has experienced since 1998. And if you're scoring at home, that's 19 years ago. 19 years they have had gone by since they've had ratings this low. You think it's an accident? You think it's because the games are boring, although many of them are? Well, you probably need to pay a little bit closer attention to what the fans are saying as these numbers go down. Here's one thing they're saying. Hey, DirecTV, you know that NFL ticket that you sold me? The Sunday ticket so I can watch not just the Lions game, or not just the Browns game, depending on what market in which I live, but all of the games. I want that Sunday package, boy. Give me that money. Give me that $280 Sunday ticket package so I can watch every game in every city. Well, now that the NFL has decided to become essentially a liberal activist organization, fans are saying, I want my money back. And so many of them are saying it, that DirecTV has found that they have no choice but to grant it, because they are going to lose subscribers. People are going to dump their dish, dump their DirecTV dish and go back to another cable provider, or cut the cord altogether and go do the Hulu Netflix thing. DirecTV, and the story is from CBS, NFL Sunday Ticket is a service offered by DirecTV that allows fans to watch every NFL game every week. It costs $280. Ordinarily, you cannot get a refund for the service once the season starts. This year, however, DirecTV is offering an unprecedented refund for at least some subscribers who are canceling their subscriptions due to anger over players protesting the national anthem. The Wall Street Journal originally reported on the change in policy. ESPN.com spoke to a spokesperson from AT&T, which owns DirecTV, who declined to confirm the change in policy and said the company would not be sharing any statistics on the number of subscribers who canceled this season for this reason and received refunds. The New York Post, however, spoke to a subscriber who claimed that a customer service representative told them there were already five similar cancellations, cancellation calls to his own on Tuesday, yesterday. The protests, of course, we know, are, I'm not going to get into the details of all those. We know this. We've been discussing them for a while now. Add the number of cancellations of the Sunday ticket being reported widely by multiple agencies, and since AT&T won't confirm the number, we won't know how many. But what we have confirmed is when they call to cancel their Sunday ticket, if they cite anger over the national anthem protests as the reason, that's when they're getting their refunds. If they just say the games are boring, DirecTV is saying, too bad. We didn't promise you any type of exciting games. All we did was we promised you the games. You signed it. You paid us. There it is. But if you say because of the national anthem and it's a personal slight to you, that's when they're saying, okay, you can have your money back. Because they know. They know what the NFL is slowly finding out. DirecTV knows what the NFL is slowly finding out. That when you tick off middle America, when you tick off tens of millions of fans to the point where they are not buying your product anymore, it is bad for business. Money talks, and you know what walks. And finally, before I get to the bottom of the hour Sports Center and our European, if you're waiting for the European vacation flyaway, bear with me. It's coming. In addition to that, more and more fans are taking up the hashtag torch the ticks. They are burning their tickets, and not just their tickets. They are burning all kinds of NFL gear. They're starting bonfires with the jerseys of their favorite players that they used to love. Pennants, blankets, flags, you know, team flags, that would be not American flags. Obviously, that's kind of what we're talking about here. But they're burning stuff all over the country. Another hashtag has been burn the NFL. You had torch the ticks. And now, just because there's more than tickets, burn the NFL is a trending hashtag as fans are expressing their fury and posting videos of themselves lighting jerseys and other things on fire. I'm looking at videos right now. Saints gear, Packers gear, Vikings gear, Seahawks gear, Cowboys gear. That's a Patriot. How about that? Ironically enough, Patriots. Patriots hats all being torched. What's this one? That's a Cardinals hat being torched. Let's see what else. Colts, there's a former Marine burning the tickets. That's a torch the ticks a hashtag. Burning in his fire pit. Hey, I have that fire pit. That's literally the exact same fire pit I have on my back patio. I know you needed to know that, right? Anyway, they're throwing his Colts tickets into his fire pit. And on it goes. I mean, there's a Chargers one. Fans are burning their stuff, and the league is, well, let's just say I hope they're starting to take notice. They have the ability to control this. They really do. Roger Goodell needs to have a conference call with his boys, meaning the NFL owners who employ him, and say, guys, I'm not going to put this on me any longer. If you want to establish a policy requiring your employees to stand for the anthem outside in full view of the fans rather than being in the locker room or the tunnel, you can do that. And if you want to fine them if they don't, you can do that too. This is all on you because I don't want it. This is a personal team decision. You're the employer. They're the employees. And I hope that's exactly what he does, and I hope every owner recognizes that the feelings of their little snowflake players who want to stand in protest or kneel or sit in protest come secondary to the feelings and the patriotism of thousands and thousands of fans of every one of 32 NFL teams. I hope that is exactly what does happen. They're getting all of the incentive in the world to fix this now. and it's called dollars, which is, of course, the only incentive they ever have to do anything. All right, 4:36. We're a little bit late for this, but we've got to do this each and every day. We try to do it between the 4:20 and 4:30 portion of the show. It is 4:36 now, but this is your opportunity to fly away across the pond on the European vacation. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket with a chance for you to fly to one of six European destinations from Toledo Express Airport via Charlotte, North Carolina. To qualify, be caller 5 right now. 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. You can try it again each and every weekday afternoon on this program, or you can register one time at 1065theticket.com. From Toledo Express Airport, Toledo Port Authority, American Airlines, and Toledo's sports leader, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We'll find our winner during this bottom of the hour Sports Center. We'll come back and take phone calls right here on the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling down the hour, or rolling up toward the top of the hour, I guess we could say it that way, because at the top of the hour, drive time coming your way, 12 minutes away. Philip Weidel or Weidel? Help me out there, Kush. Philip Weidel?
Weidel.
Say again?
It's Weidel.
It is Weidel. Philip Weidel of Maumee. Congratulations, Philip. You are the latest qualifier for our grand prize drawing that will be held early next month in the... tickets, European vacation, flyaway. Good luck.
Early next month. Next month is also next week, too.
I know that. I still don't know the day of the drawing. I've been asking you for that.
No one's told me either. I know it's soon, guys.
The last qualifier will be drawn on October 6th. I know that much. I just don't know exactly if the drawing is going to be on the 7th. Usually,
right. Taking qualifiers, the part that you, the listeners, care about right now, goes through next week.
I think they're
going
to care about when the damn drawing is, too, so if you can find that
true.
Out.
That's true. Good point.
All right, let's go to Jimmy in Toledo. Jimmy, you are on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. How you doing, sir?
Hey, what's up there? Listen, brother, I don't know if I mentioned this yesterday. I canceled my NFL ticket on Monday, and I spoke to the person at DirecTV, it's actually AT&T. They bought up DirecTV, and I got the whole bundle, the phones, the whole nine yards. And truthfully, nobody told me I was getting a refund per se. Well, actually, they did. But they didn't say it was contingent upon me even keeping my DirecTV, so I don't know if a whole lot of people beat me to the punch or I ought to call back and make sure I'm going to be included. Because, I mean,
Hold on. So you canceled it, but you did not ask for the refund.
No, I did. But what I didn't threaten them with canceling my service. So I just want to, I'm thinking maybe I ought to, I didn't really encounter any problem with that.
Okay.
Well,
according to the stories that I've read on this coverage of this, DirecTV has made it clear that they are giving refunds if people are citing their anger over the national anthem as the reason for wanting to boycott the NFL and to turn it off.
If you just say,
I want to cancel because I don't like it, or the games are boring, or
they're
going to say tough crap, you know, you bought it, it's yours, you know, buyer beware.
Yeah, I did do that. Because I got a young lady, and I can't, sometimes you want to know whether they're in another country and across the world, because they've gotten really cagey about who they hire, because it's like, you know, sometimes you'll get a call center in Omaha, Nebraska, and sometimes it's Singapore or something, right?
Right.
And sometimes you can tell and sometimes you can't. So
I like the ones when you get the person from Singapore and then they tell you that their name is Larry, you know.
right, and you can hear the echo on the line because it's like halfway
accent,
around the world.
Oh, this is, you know, English is like their fourth language, but, you know, this is Larry.
Which, by the way,
I respect. I do. They're working hard wherever they might be, and if they want to try to make themselves sound a little closer to home for the comfort of the customer, God bless them. Good luck to them.
Oh, hey, at least they're not breaking into our country trying to get a job. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
I actually made sure it's like, listen, is there any way you can put this on the, you know, on the bot? You know, is there like a little customer comment section? Because I want to specifically state, because I thought it was very important, because I want them to register why I'm canceling the ticket, because I want them to have my feedback of why. I don't want them, you know, I wanted to make it very important that they knew why, because I wanted to make a point.
You know
this
what?
Is
I don't
important
know
to me.
Comment cards or not, but you should absolutely tell them why if that's what you're doing. And it looks, again, by the news coverage, if that's exactly what people are doing. They're getting the message, and that's why they're greenlighting all the refunds.
Well, good. I was happy to hear that.
After the start of the season.
I was happy to hear that. And also, just real quickly, I was because it's hard. I'm not going to watch another game. And then, truthfully, the game's been going on for a couple of years. And, you breathe on the quarterback or just anything. They've been ruining their game. They're only practicing in pads once a week, so the blocking and tackling's noticeably crappy.
See, now,
and,
if you call DirecTV and do that and say these games suck, they're not blocking, they're not tackling, you're not allowed to hit the quarterback. But if you just complain about the product, they're going to say, hey, look, we don't make the rules. We just sell the games. You bought the games. That's it.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though.
It's only a fundamental disagreement with the whole league and with this controversy going on. That's the only way they're going to give you any.
But the league's killing your game, and this is just like the absolute last straw for me. I mean, I could put up with bad play, but when I have to tune in and watch these people do this, and to tell you the truth, it's like they're peeing on your leg and telling you it's rainy. Now they're trying to back out and talk about this is all about unity. And listen, you and I know exactly why Colin Kaepernick did this. There's a quote somebody put up on one of the news shows, and it was very clear. And now they're trying to have it both ways now that, they're getting pushback.
Yep.
So they've got it, like you said, they've got a decision to make. And my anger is really towards the owners for letting this poison into their league in the first place.
Well, you know what, take heart, my friend. And, Jimmy, thanks for the call. Let me get some other people on the air. Take heart in that at least one owner is standing up. Jerry Richardson is saying, no more of this. I want the politicization of the game to stop. And it's ticking off his players. I hope he doesn't back down. Well, I think we know where it's going to go. He probably will be forced to back down because, again, they have got to try to find that. That's what Jerry Jones tried to do, to find that medium between ticking off the fans who don't like this stuff, because they're patriotic, and ticking off the protesters, the supporters of the protesters that don't like this stuff, who don't like the fact that these people are being told by the president they can't do it or they're going to lose their jobs. So they're trying to find that medium. But at least for now, Jerry Richardson is standing tall and saying, I don't want this. John Elway, too, by the way, director of football ops for the Broncos, Hall of Famer, is saying, I understand why some of them wanted to do it this past week, but I hope that we can put this behind us moving forward and take the politics out of football. There's a couple of guys saying enough is enough. So we'll see where that goes. Eric in Toledo is next. Eric, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, guys. It's been a while since I called in, and I figure why not call in about this?
Good to have
you. But one thing I don't understand is, I guess I do understand it, is the season ticket holders burning their tickets when you know they're probably just going to go online and sell them, because there's the NFL ticket exchange. They'll sell those tickets. They're going to still get money for them. And my family has been season ticket holders for the Cleveland Browns for years. My grandparents were season ticket holders. They left. My dad and my mom took up the season tickets since 99. I've been going to Browns games since I was 8 years old. And these people are burning their tickets? Those aren't fans then. They're not. I don't think they're fans if they're going to burn their season tickets.
They're making a point, though. I'm not one of them, so I can't speak for them. I can guess. Here's what my guess is they're doing, Eric. They don't want to just exchange them in the NFL ticket exchange thing and give them to somebody else or sell them to somebody else, because then that somebody is going to go to the games and patronize the NFL and put money in the pockets of the Haslams or the Fords if it's Detroit or whatever by buying their hot dogs and their beers and their parking and their concessions and on down the line. I think they're saying we're burning the tickets because even though they're already paid for, we're not donating any more of our money to these owners until they put a stop to this. And that's why we can't just let somebody else go sit in the seats and the money still goes into the pockets of the teams.
Hey, I just think it sounds a little ridiculous. I'm going to keep going to games. I may not agree with the timing of the protest, but I understand it. Just not the timing of it.
Fair enough. Have a good night, guys.
Fair
enough. I appreciate your point on it, my man. And you know what? The music is playing faster than I thought it would, so my apologies to Kent in Toledo. Kent, I don't have time to get to you, my friend, because that music means that Mike Miller is warming up his vocal cords, and he's ready to rock and roll. Drive time is coming up next. Stay where you are for that. And then tomorrow, 3 o'clock, we're back again. Dwayne Wade will officially be a Cavalier. In fact, already is. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Get into the baseball playoff race and much more as we continue on the Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. So stay where you are for drive time. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.